Welcome to the Salmon Arm Chamber of Commerce Federal All Candidates Forum. My name is Adam Meikle, and I'm pleased to be your moderator this evening. Before we start this event, I wanted to let you know the Chamber is a membership-driven organization that works on behalf of our members and represents the collective voice of our business community. We have a volunteer board of directors, and I'm one of them, I guess. joining us this evening through the All Candidates Forum. However, not... Oh, that's for our board members are attending but not heard publicly. Questions were collected from the community in advance and will be presented during this question and answer period. The forum will be recorded and posted tomorrow as well. Okay. So a quick run through of the agenda. We will introduce all of the candidates, they're in their last name alphabetically, and then we will have opening remarks. This will be followed by the question and answer period, closing remarks, and then we'll have provide final details. So I guess we will introduce all of our lovely candidates. I'd like to introduce Mel Arnold from the Conservative Party, if you want to wave at us. Kyle Delfing from the People's Party. Shelley Desautel, did I get that right? Yeah. Hi. Andrea Gunner from the Green Party. And Ron Johnson from the NDP. Welcome, everyone. Our open forum officially will have opening remarks from all of our candidates. We will allot 5 minutes per candidate, and we will start with the Conservative Party, represented by Mel Arnold, if you will.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you to the Salmon Arm Chamber of Commerce for hosting this important forum tonight in the traditional territory of the Shikwapmek. I'm here tonight as the Conservative candidate to share our positive vision for the future, and I look forward to answering the questions that you have submitted. Tonight's forum is so important. Over the past 6 years, I've heard people in our region express their concerns on many different issues, issues as varied as the good people and the beautiful landscape of the North Okanagan Shuswap. Issues such as affordability, housing, accessibility, and many, many more. We must rein in government spending and inflation immediately to address the affordability challenges, like the price of groceries going up and gas that has risen 30% in the last year alone. Housing prices that have exploded, making it nearly impossible for young people to own their own homes. Conservatives have a plan to address these runaway costs by promoting grocery competition, lowering cell phone and internet rates, by introducing more competition. We've also committed to building 1 million more homes to tackle the lack of inventory that is making home ownership so expensive. We are also committed to reconciliation with Indigenous peoples through the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's calls to action, a process established by the former Conservative government. And we will do that under the guidance and direction of Indigenous communities. And we will work collaboratively on preserving their culture and building economic opportunity for them. Over the past 18 months, our health has become a major focus across the globe, whether it's the virus and the pandemic itself or the mental health challenges as a result. I believe we have all become much more aware of how much more attention our health deserves. That's why we are determined to make mental health a priority by increasing health transfers to treat an additional 1 million Canadians with mental health concerns, as well as adding another 325 million to add an additional 1,000 beds for addiction recovery. Our health is directly impacted by the environment around us as well. And Canadians are seeing how directly we are connected to that environment, particularly in a year when heat domes and raging wildfires have dominated our summer. Seeing and understanding this, our Conservative Party is committed to our plan titled Secure the Environment. We will fight climate change, but we won't do it on the backs of hardworking Canadians. I would encourage everyone watching to have a look at our Conservative platform at conservative.ca/plan. I'm proud of it, and I believe you will find that there is something positive in it for every Canadian in every walk of life. Thank you, and I look forward to your questions.
Thanks, Mel. We will go on to opening remarks from Kyle Delfing, the People's Party of Canada.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you to the Salmon-Arm Chamber of Commerce for holding this tonight. I'd just like to let people know that the People's Party of Canada is doing politics differently. And one of the ways we're doing it differently is we're looking to abolish the Indian Act by bringing all the Aboriginal leaders in this country together with the government to find a way out and a way forward, so that we can raise our Aboriginal brothers and sisters to an equal level with Canadians. As we've seen in the last 18 months of government, we have both the Conservatives and the Liberals failing to really take this country forward and out of the pandemic. We've been in a weird state of limbo, but furthermore, we've seen churches burn, we've seen statues fall, and we've seen even cities burn. And we're blaming all sorts of social, economic, and quote unquote climate crisis for this. The People's Party of Canada understands that there's a better way forward. We're looking to initiate an economic recovery by getting out of this crisis of COVID-19, using a practical approach to getting the economy backed on its feet and having Canadians back at work and able to provide for themselves again. Another thing we'd like to focus on is clean environments, because we've been talking about climate change as a climate crisis or climate emergency for a very long time, but no government has acted as if it was an emergency. The People's Party of Canada understands that climate change is a reality and that we must deal with it. We will not propose a tax. In fact, we propose to get rid of the carbon tax nationally. And even if we can't get rid of it provincially, it will still help British Columbians at the dinner table and to provide heat and clothing, as price of goods has soared over the last few years with the federal carbon tax. The other thing we need to stop doing to get affordability back down is over-borrowing. We're borrowing far too much money as a government. We went from an $8 billion surplus to a $10 billion deficit to a $30 billion deficit to a $316 billion deficit. It's uncontrollable and it's dividing our dollars. It's creating inflation. Inflation doesn't make you wealthier. It actually makes it harder for you to purchase wealth. It divides your dollar. The other thing we'd like to propose that no party out here, including the Conservatives, is proposing is restoring private property rights to gun owners, to all law-abiding gun owners, by abolishing the order in cabinet. On top of that, I'd like to say that this country is facing a crisis like it's never faced in its entire, it's never seen this coming down the pipe. We have a vaccine passport system here in British Columbia, and that may be provincial right now, but it is an interim measure until the next federal government, whether it be Conservative, NDP, or Liberal, take over, and they will initiate a federal vaccine passport system. There is a ballot box question. This is more of a referendum than it is an election. We have many great policies that you can check out at peoplespartyofcanada.ca, but the best policy is the fact that we will fight the institution of implementation of a vaccine passport system across Canada, and we will fight the ones that are implemented. We will help Canadians fight their provincial government to get rid of these. As we see on October 12th, you'll see all these people here tell you about, they worry about the elderly and the sick. Well, the long-term nurses that are losing their job on October 12th will not be taking a vaccine, and they will be losing their job, and those elderly and those sick will have a lesser care. On October 26th, as of today, there are nurses, doctors, and anybody else in healthcare losing their job. This country is going to have a hard time dealing with the sick. In Kamloops alone, they're over 130% capacity and they're running at 60% for their staff. It's time to get serious about this. This country is built on freedom. The federal government's number one duty is life and liberty. You protect life and you protect liberty. And the Conservatives and the NDP and the Liberals have failed to do that for the last 18 months. In fact, they're taking us down a course that many Canadians are dissatisfied with. It's time to change the course of this nation. In the North Okanagan Shuswap, you have an opportunity to split the vote and not worry about getting a Liberal seat in or an NDP seat. If you divide the votes between the Conservatives and the People's Party of Canada, there's 19,000 votes. That's a few thousand votes away from the Liberals' best year, and this is not a good year to be a Liberal. I promise you, if you put me into the House of Commons, I will be one of a handful of People's Party of Canada members of Parliament who will stand firm and stand tall for your rights and your freedom and everything that people have died and fought for in this country. I'm a vocal person. Let's get my foot in the door. Let's get our foot in the door. This is the People's Party of Canada. This is not the Conservative Party. This is not the Liberal Party, the People's Party. We stand for the people. We have no whip. We talk for you. If I fail, it's because I didn't make you happy and I didn't protect your life and your liberty. Put us into the House of Commons and watch this country change for the better. We need to get back to normal, and nobody here is going to offer you that tonight except for myself and the People's Party of Canada. Thank you.
Thank you, Kyle. On to Shelley with the Liberals.
Good evening. My name is Shelley Desitel, and I am running as the candidate for the Liberal Party here in the North Okanagan-Shuswap. I would like to acknowledge that I am speaking to you now from the traditional and unceded territory of the Secwepemc people and the chosen home for the Salmon Arm Métis Nation. I want to thank the Chamber for hosting us this evening, and I especially want to thank you for joining us this evening. First, I want to tell you a little bit about myself and why I decided to put myself forward as a candidate. I was born and raised in Vernon, and I have lived here in Salmon Arm for 7 years. I have a degree in geography from UBCO and an advanced diploma in geographic information systems from BCIT. I am the spouse of a Canadian Forces veteran, the mother of two teenagers, an instructor at Okanagan College, and the owner of a mapping business. I also serve on several boards in the community, as well as being the service officer at the Royal Canadian Legion. My decision to run for elected office was not one that I took lightly. Clearly, I am someone who likes to be involved in the community, but this was an opportunity to help in my community on a scale that I haven't been able to before. As a lifelong resident of both Vernon and Salmon Arm, I have a unique understanding of the diverse needs of the sprawling riding, and I have been witness to the lack of representation that our communities have received for a very long time. Rather than continue to be dissatisfied with the representation and service that the North Okanagan Shuswap has received, I decided to put my name forward and try to fix this. As my friends and colleagues will tell you, I am a fixer. We deserve someone who represents our needs and challenges to Ottawa, rather than represent their party to us. Since I began my journey to first become the nominee and now to run for Member of Parliament, I have had the opportunity to visit every corner of this vast riding. I've come to meet a diverse group of people who are united by living in this little corner of paradise. I've heard how the pandemic has led us to new challenges, but also how the Liberal Party has been able to support you through those challenges. Whether you lost your job, your business slowed down, or you've even had to close for periods of time, I've heard how the child care benefit has made a huge difference every month to your families, and how the COVID top-ups for seniors has provided breathing room for so many of you and your older family members. I have heard how relieved many of you felt, as I did, when you were able to receive your COVID vaccines, and how glad you were that we were able to get so many vaccines soon after they were available. I've also heard how many of you are now seeking to come out of COVID with a stronger family, a stronger community, and a stronger country. Our platform has been deemed to be the most climate effective and affordable. Our housing plan, the plan that comes closest to achieving housing affordability, and our child care plan will massively improve affordability. And the most credible fiscal plan, realistic, responsible, and transparent. All while continuing to take a strong position on how we fight COVID-19, continuing meaningful reconciliation, promoting equality, diversity, and inclusion, protecting and improving Canada's public health system, enhancing support for seniors and their caregivers, and putting Canada on a path to a fair and equitable country. We have come through a challenging couple of years together, and our world has changed a lot since we've had a national conversation about these vital issues. Tonight, I hope to share with you both my vision and what we can build together and my commitment to you and our community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Shelley. We will hear from Andrea with the Green Party.
Hello, thank you, Adam. Thank you to the Salmon Arm Chamber of Commerce and to all of the attendees this evening. Thank you for coming. A little bit of background on me. I'm an agricultural economist and I'm a farmer. I grew up in Vernon, went away to university and to work in, of course, the metropolis of Vancouver, as so many of us, and then returned to the Okanagan, to the North Okanagan, and my husband and I farm and live in Spelling Machine. I am a business owner. I have been in government at the provincial level. I have been in the school system as a teacher. I have been on boards at the municipal, industry, provincial, national, and international level. I work collaboratively. I like wearing a lot of hats, and I have a deep and abiding respect for the beauty and the dynamic of this region that we call home. My reason for running for the Green Party is I have a really strong belief that in order to move forward, we need more equality, not less. And the last 18 months have seen that equality gap widen. The Green Party understands that there cannot be climate action in any real tangible way until we have better social equality. We also, in order to do that, need to work across party lines. We need to work at all levels of government and with community organizations. We need to reduce the inequality so that we can actually take real, tangible steps towards reducing our carbon emissions and actually drawing down the carbon that we are releasing into the atmosphere. One of the ways of doing that, of course, is reducing inefficiency, working smarter, not just harder, and also reducing waste. If you look at countries around the world, the ones that have the highest ranking, international ranking, for health, well-being, and happiness of their citizens, all those governments have either a coalition or a minority government that Greens are a part of. The reason for that is because of the belief in social equality. And with that, we can address climate action in a way without despair, actually with hope, to bring our diverse ideas, our creativity, our ingenuity. Canada is such a rich, rich country, and we don't get any further ahead if we're working at cross purposes. We need to work together. I would really like to represent this riding in Ottawa and help bring that collaborative nature to problem solving, to working across party lines for the betterment of you, the constituents, and the population of the North Okanagan Shuswap. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea. We're heading on to Ron with the NDP.
Thank you, Adam. And I'd like to also thank the Salmon Arm Chamber of Commerce for hosting this event. I'd like to acknowledge that I'm speaking to you from the unceded traditional territory of Sioux Okanagan peoples. My name is Ron Johnston, and I'm your NDP candidate for North Okanagan Shuswap. I was born and raised in Calgary, and I've enjoyed a career in mechanical design that had me working for high-tech companies and brought me into the interior in the year 2000. It's because of that design background that I've built a very real understanding that complex challenges require creative solutions. And if you want a solution to succeed, you need to involve everyone who will be affected, engage them in a spirit of collaboration and equality. Volunteerism has also been important to me, from many years spent with the Calgary Aerospace Museum after college to being the director and eventually vice president of the Prince George Downtown Association before shifting that energy into supporting the NDP. For several years, I've worked with both the provincial and federal NDP EDAs, having most recently worked on the successful campaign of our current MLA, Harwinder Sandhu. We all know the pandemic has hit hard for many families in the North Okanagan Chuseok. Between job loss and rising costs, getting by day and day has become more of a challenge than ever. I understand these challenges firsthand because my family faces the same struggles. That was a big part of my decision to run. Working class people are vastly underrepresented in politics, but I'm running to give a voice back to everyday people in the North Okanagan Chuseok and to make sure that the super rich and corporations pay their fair share of the investment into the pandemic recovery for a better future for all of us. Years of Liberal and Conservative inaction has left us with a lot of catching up to do on issues that are very important to people in the North Okanagan Chuseok. We've all seen the devastating effects of climate change this past summer, both globally and locally. We spent the first half of summer under a heat dome and most of the second half struggling to breathe from the smoke from the wildfires. Crops were damaged, homes were lost, and vulnerable people lost their lives. We need to take immediate action before it's too late. We've also seen how fragile our healthcare and long-term care systems are. Throughout the pandemic, things have been stretched thin. That's why we are committed to an end of for-profit healthcare and long-term care. And we simply must address issues around affordability and housing. Too many hard workers and families are being left behind as housing costs skyrocket and wages stagnate. Local small businesses are facing many of the same challenges, and with rising rents, merchant fees, and telecom costs combined with shortages of staff that lead to reduced operating hours. And we must make real meaningful progress on Indigenous justice and reconciliation and move it to the forefront of everything our government is doing, from implementing the 94 call to action to including Indigenous leaders at decision-making tables on how we address climate change, conservation, water quality, and so much more. Unlike a lot of what you'll be hearing from the Liberals and Conservatives, these are not new ideas for the NDP. The NDP celebrated 60 years as a workers' party this summer, and we have always fought to put people first. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you all candidates for your opening remarks. It's time for the question and answer period. We will officially be keeping track of time and advise candidates as time remains. We ask all candidates to assist us by being respectful to the allotted time. Questions were submitted by community members via email to the Chamber Administration. We received over 40 questions. A special thank you to the community members who took the time to submit their question. From these questions, we condensed them into key categories and revised them into their final form for tonight's event. Due to the overwhelming submission and array of topics, we have decided to ask a total of 20 questions. Each question will be answered by two candidates. The question order has been randomly drawn in advance of tonight's form. To ensure transparency and equity, the names will be drawn tonight by myself on the screen, and I will ask the two candidates, and then we will move on to the next question. The remaining candidates, until such time as we complete all the question and answer portion of this program. Equally important, we recognize the importance to hear all candidates' responses to these questions. So tomorrow, the chamber will distribute the full list of questions to all the candidates, which provides them an opportunity to respond through their media sources. So for our first question, I will draw two names, and they are Ron and Kyle. We'll start with Ron. You have 1 minute to respond, and we'll give you a 15-second reminder so you know when your time is running out. What is your party's position on the issue of firearms and the changes that have been made to them? First with Ron.
As we've seen in recent years, too many lives have been lost to gun crime in Canada, and we believe that everyone deserves to feel safe in their community. Time and again, the Liberals and Conservatives have used the issue of gun control to divide and polarize Canadians. The Liberals have had 6 years to act, but they've been more interested in politicking and haven't gotten assault-style weapons off our streets. So the NDP are committed to keep assault weapons and illegal guns off of our streets permanently. We will do more to stop the smuggling of guns across the border from the US, and we will prevent violence at its roots by ensuring all young people in Canada have options for success and hope for the future.
Awesome. Thank you, Ron. And Kyle, you have 1 minute to respond.
Thank you, Adam. So the People's Party of Canada is quite unique in the fact that we're not going to use law-abiding gun owners anymore as a political pawn. What we're going to do is we're going to restore private property rights to law-abiding gun owners, all law-abiding gun owners. The 1,500 plus, I think it's over 3,000 guns that have been illegally taken from Canadians in an unjust manner. They're called assault rifles, as Ron said. Well, you know, the difference between an SKS and a 30-30 is not much. It's about the same caliber. And it's just that the 30-30 looks like an old Western rifle, and the SKS came out of some Soviet wars. There's nothing scary about these rifles. Most people who purchase those assault rifles purchase it because it comes from munition stockpiles, surplus, and surplus is cheap. So for a $1.35, you can practice your aim with a SKS, and then you can go out for $1.50 and you can try that 30-30. So we'll restore the gun rights, and we'll make sure that RCMP and politicians just can't take your guns willy-nilly ever again.
Thank you, Kyle. I will draw names for the next question. It's just Kyle and Ron in opposite order, but that's the way it was drawn. So, okay. The next question, and we'll start with Kyle. The COVID pandemic has exposed our long-term care system's flaws at a terrible cost in lives. Some believe federal legislation should make long-term care and home care part of our public care system. What is your position on long-term care facilities? What are you prepared to do to change the legislation around the operation of long-term care homes? And we'll start with Kyle.
One of the biggest issues in Canada is the federal healthcare transfer. It's not scrutinized or audited. Money goes into indiscriminate spending sometimes, not all the time. What we want to do is eliminate that kind of situation by taking funding out of the hands of Ottawa and put healthcare funding into the hands of the provinces. How do we do that? We get rid of the GST points, no longer collect GST, which is about $40 billion plus a year, and we put that, which is the same as the healthcare transfer payments, into the hands of the provinces. There will be a couple poorer provinces that cannot afford that, so we'll figure out an equalization formula for that so they can get adequate care. The positive in this is that there's only one politician between you and your tax dollars and adequate care, so you can demand your MLA provide better care, whether it be in long-term care or in your health care, or even if it be in your GP. So that is one of the biggest differences that we're looking at, is getting Ottawa back into its constitutional role of just legislating, but not administering or funding healthcare. That's the province's job, and it'll make it easier for you, the taxpayer, to get better services all around.
Thank you, Kyle. Ron, we'll let you respond.
Well, plain and simple, profit should never be the bottom line when it comes to our seniors. Our seniors' lives are more valuable than corporate profit. Canadians were horrified to see the conditions in our long-term care facilities during the pandemic. Justin Trudeau teamed up with Erin O'Toole and voted against taking profit out of long-term care. And the Liberals have no problem bringing in a pipeline under public ownership, but they won't do the same with Rivera to save lives. So it's time to take the profit out of long-term care. New Democrats will end for-profit delivery and bring long-term care homes under the public umbrella. And we'll introduce a care guarantee for seniors, including national standards for care and working conditions in long-term homes.
Thank you. Thank you, Ron. I will draw names for the next question. Hopefully we got different people. Shelley and Mel. So our next question is, Bill C-10 is an act to amend the Broadcasting Act, removing requirements that all broadcasters buy fully owned by Canadians, removes the 7-year term limit for the CTRC issued broadcast licenses, and adds a mechanism for imposing conditions on broadcasters without them being bound to the license term. The bill also introduces monetary fines for violating orders and regulating issues by the CTRC. Please share your views or position on Bill C-10, as there is significant concerns that it is that in its current form, it would infringe on freedom of speech online. And we'll start with Shelley.
Thank you. So the bill is intended to level the playing field by applying the same rules that a traditional broadcasters are held under, such as Netflix and Amazon Prime. Right now, they're not regulated. So we're not after your personal social media accounts. We're not interested in controlling what you're posting. This bill is intended specifically address the topic of Canadian content so that Canadian artists are supported with their content being more and more viewed by people that are using these streaming services. There were some issues with section 4.1 being removed, but this has been amended and the wording was removed, and the Heritage Committee agreed that it does not infringe on freedom of expression. Thank you.
Thank you, Shelley. And Mel, would you like to respond, please?
Thank you, Adam. And Bill C-10 certainly has been a concern. I heard it from many, many people in my office over the past months. As Shelley stated, it was originally introduced as a bill to level the playing field between the big online giants and smaller Canadian material producers. But what happened was when that bill was at committee stage, the Liberal members voted to remove the clause that protected personal online content. They could not explain why they did that, and that's why there was, has been so much concern, is that it is going to impact your ability to post your personal online views. Bill C-36 that came out in the dying hours of Parliament is as bad or worse, and they've also looked at further draft legislation that could limit your freedom of expression. That's why it's a concern. Thank you.
Thank you, Mel. Now we will go on to our next question. I'll draw a name. It's Andrea and Shelley. Our next question is on affordability. Rental housing rates are at an extremely high price with extremely low availability. What will your party do to encourage construction of much needed affordable rental housing? And Andrea, you can do first.
Thank you, Adam. There are a number of different models that are used in other parts of the world where real estate is as expensive or more expensive than in Canada. As crazy as it is here, there are other places that have already led the charge on that. So one of the options that we already have in this area are cooperative housing, co-housing, Abbeyfield type communities. And what has been happening recently in order to address lower income as well as medium income families to do construction are collaborations across many layers of government together with community groups. So churches being involved in that, other kinds of housing advocacy, as well as BC Housing and the Canadian Housing Mortgage Corporation. Here in Salmon Arm, as an example, one of those collaborations is responsible for building.
Thank you, Andrea. Sorry about that. And we will go on to Shelley's response.
1 minute is very short to answer all of this because we have a huge platform, but we have a rent to own program that's going to allow you to pay less on your rent to then put towards a down payment on your home. We're going to have an anti-flipping tax, which is going to stop the raising of prices on homes by people who purchase homes just to flip them and have them at a higher cost later on. We are going to add an additional 250,000 units that are built, repaired, preserved, which is going to bring our total of homes to 1.4 million homes. This is going to add more homes into our market, which is going to support people being able to get into this housing market. We are going to have a home buyer's bill of rights, which is going to ban blind bidding. It's going to have a legal right to home inspection. It's going to provide a bunch of things for the buyers. So we have this fantastic plan. It's called A Home for Everyone. And I really encourage you guys to look at it because it's much bigger than what I can say in a minute.
Thank you, Shelley. Now I'm going to draw names for our next question. Mel and Kyle, our next question. What is your party's stance on a Canadian organic agriculture program? And we'll start with Mel.
Thank you, Adam. Our platform includes many pieces that are also tied into our plan to secure the environment. We recognize that agriculture can be a huge part of carbon sequestration and reducing our emissions. We have companies right here in Salmon Arm working on further processing animal waste so that it goes out onto the fields differently. That's just one example right here close to home where we can work both with the organic and the traditional agriculture sectors to build our better agricultural community here in Canada. Then we can also take that knowledge and experience and technology and market around the world to, as I say, increase our capacity of our organic sector and our non-organic as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mel. Kyle.
Grow Canada's GDP. We want to build a robust economy. Organic agriculture would definitely be part of that economy. As Mel was saying, we can offshore get a lot of that technology going out after we promote research and development. From an economic standpoint, that's where our party differs from the rest of the parties. We are looking to eliminate the capital gains tax altogether, which has been around since 1972. The advantage to this is it'll free up capital from Canadian investors to Canadian developers. So if we are going to start these organic agriculture programs, like Mel said again, they're often smaller operations. So to have that capital flowing from private hands and not just from the government should help these investors and help these engineers create these programs and the farmers develop the system and then sell that to the world. But we can't do that until we start getting Canadians investing in Canadians again. And that's where the People's Party of Canada differentiates itself from the rest of the people up here. We're not offering to take your tax dollars and promote something. We're offering to let you keep your tax dollars and promote something.
Thank you, Kyle. We'll draw names. It's Mel and Ron this time. So our next question, starting with Mel. Salmon stocks have declined significantly and continue to do so. As this is a federal responsibility, please articulate your party's plan and timeline towards recovery and growth of BC wild Pacific salmon stocks. And we'll start with Mel.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to at least start into this question on a subject that is so complex. After 6 years almost of sitting on the Standing Committee for Fisheries, one of the first things I saw is that we need integrated fisheries management plans to manage fish stocks. It's been pointed out that the department has only committed to develop a plan to develop those plans. That was pointed out to the Liberal government about 4 to 5 years ago. They still haven't accomplished that. They've committed millions of dollars without any plan to do that. We recognize that we need to work with small local conservation organizations like the Pacific Salmon Foundation, who know what it's going to take to rebuild those salmon stocks. And we also need to work with our Indigenous communities right across BC, up and down the coast, to make sure that Indigenous communities have the input into that rebuilding of those salmon stocks.
Thank you, Mel. Okay, Ron, I will let you respond there.
The NDP are committed to pursuing a nature conservation agenda, and we will protect 30% of our land, freshwater, and oceans by 2030. And we will also expand our national parks and restore biodiversity and ensure that the Species at Risk Act is enforced. And protecting land and waters will help Canada meet its climate change goals while safeguarding a good quality of life for generations. New Democrats will stand up to the abuse of power by polluters, the harms of which disproportionately impact remote and marginalized communities. And we will support Indigenous-led conservation and land use and climate planning, including growing the Indigenous Guardians program and working hand in hand to advance protection and restoration of wild Pacific salmon populations on the West Coast.
Thank you, Ron. Okay, I will draw a name for our next question. We have Kyle and Andrea. And our question is, a huge spike in inflation rate reached 3.7 in July, significantly greater than the 2% target. Everything from home prices, building supplies, gasoline, groceries, and even services have increased substantially. What is your party prepared to do to curb the escalating rate of inflation? Kyle first.
Well, it's going to take some drastic measures because it took some very drastic measures to increase that inflation at that rate. Like I said in the opening there, $316 billion deficit, it's got to go. Don't let anybody trick you into thinking that if we get rid of it, the country's going to suffer. It's suffering because we have it. The debt that we have, 84%, I think it's actually up to 86% increased of our national debt in the last 18 months. That is why we're at almost 4% inflation. To further that, in the spring, we were encroaching 14% inflation on building materials, which equates to a lack of affordable living. All the building materials going into those houses, making the houses far more expensive. The liberals and the conservatives will have you fooled thinking $1.4 billion or 1.4 million houses on behest of the taxpayer is going to make life more affordable. It won't. It will only increase inflation because the taxpayer in the hands of the wrong politicians, which these two parties have been for the very long time, is a bottomless pocket. And they will continue to take our money out of that pocket and purchase these homes, competing with us on the fair market. That needs to stop as well. There's many different ways to deal with inflation. We have an economist at the head of our party. He would probably
Sorry,
make the
that's,
best comment.
That's all. Thank you. That's all we got. Thanks, Scott. And Andrea, if you'd like to respond.
Thank you. Unfortunately, inflation is going to continue to escalate unless we get climate change under control. And so the challenge of that is we know already that crops are 40 to 60% less this year because of the heat dome, because of the drought. We need to get climate change under control. And in order to do that, we need to reduce our subsidies. We need to eliminate our subsidies to the fossil fuel industry and instead support green energy, renewable energy, and find ways of creating efficiencies and reducing waste. I've said this before, but it's so true. We're a very wasteful society. We need to get our costs under control. I completely agree with Kyle that our costs have burgeoned, but I don't think that we're going about it the right way. We did need to support the communities, but now we need to get past the COVID and focus on rebuilding.
Sorry, Andrea, that's all. Thank you. I will draw names again. We have Kyle and Mel. And our next question is on safe drinking water. So safe drinking water should be accessible to each and every person residing in Canada. How will you and your party establish and maintain this minimum standard? And we'll start with Kyle.
Thank you, Adam. So the People's Party of Canada is looking to make life more affordable for Canadians. And one of the ways we'd like to do that is by reduce our overall expenditure on foreign aid. And when we do that, we can bring that money home. We can focus on, I think it's 50 or maybe even 80 reserves out there that have no fresh drinking water. To further that, eliminating the Indian Act would help us negotiate with Aboriginal communities and reserve communities to enhance their infrastructure and make it more self-sustainable so that their government programs were funded and pushed along by capital investment into their communities, as the Indian Act being removed in a cordial manner would allow for that kind of investment inflow. We need to start building all our communities across Canada, both rural and urban. So the People's Party of Canada would definitely focus on that and a clean environment. Thank you, Adam.
Thank you, Kyle. And on to Mel's response.
Thank you, Adam. And I believe everyone should have the right to clean drinking water. And I've met with First Nations here in the North Okanagan Shuswap over the past 6 years and heard how they have needed resources to be able to provide fresh water, potable, without boiling water advisories to their community members. What this government has failed to do is recognize how complex that is when we have bans with multiple different reserves that have multiple different water systems. It's not just providing one water system in one area. We have communities that are growing that need to have water supply to add to the accommodate their growing populations. We are going to make sure we get infrastructure projects done on the ground, shovels in the ground immediately as soon as we can after we form government. Thank you.
Thank you, Mel. I'll draw names for the next. We have Shelley and Ron. And our next question. If you look at all the help wanted signs, our labor pool appears to have disappeared. How will you and your party convince people to come back to work, especially when it comes to staffing our health services, or services rather? And we will start with Shelley.
So this is kind of a bigger picture. So we really need to look at not only people getting back to work, but how can we can get them to a space where they can go back to work? So this comes down to our childcare plan. There are people there that cannot afford to go to work and pay childcare, therefore they don't work. So our $10 a day childcare plan is going to get people to be able to go back into that workforce. We also need to look at mental health. There are people that do not want to go back to work because over COVID, there has been trauma, there have been mental health issues. So we have a mental health plan that we are going to have mental health transfers into our economy so that we can have the care that is needed. We also have our affordable housing plan. If we do not have homes in our communities for people to live, people cannot work here. So we need to ensure that we have the infrastructure, which I will advocate for as your MP, to get that infrastructure into the North Okanagan-Shuswap. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ron, your response.
Thank you. The NDP is committed to helping local businesses and tourism get through the pandemic and beyond. Here in North Okanagan-Shuswap, we know how important tourism is to our local economy, and we've elected. We will work to reduce the operating costs for these businesses by capping merchant fees, credit card transactions at 1%, lowering internet and cell rates, and those are currently among the highest in the world. My party will implement a hiring bonus that pays the employer portion of EI and CPP contributions, investing in skills and training programs, particularly for underemployed groups to help get them back into the workforce. Our commitment to $10 a day childcare will also achieve this by opening the door for struggling parents, predominantly women, to work outside the home. And universal pharmacare will give all Canadians access to the medications they need while saving about $600 per employee for businesses that pay health benefits. And we'll freeze tax rates for small businesses and keep rent and wage subsidies in place. All of this will bring a comprehensive package that allows-
Sorry, Ron, that's all the time, sorry. I will draw names for the next question. Ron and Andrea. And the next question, what is your party's stance on immigration? And we'll start with Ron.
So start with, we need a fair and compassionate immigration system. Canada is so much stronger when we keep families together and we help newcomers contribute to our communities. Justin Trudeau talked a good game on immigration, but his policies are keeping families apart and leaving newcomers and refugees behind. We're going to focus on policies that work for everyone by keeping families together and having faster reunification that includes grandparents, helping immigrants contribute to the economy by improving foreign credential recognition. This is something that holds back so many immigrants in our country, and doing our fair share to welcome refugees that are fleeing violence and persecution in their home countries.
Thank you, Ron. And Andrea's response.
Canada is a country of immigrants. In fact, with our static growth birth rate, we need immigrants very badly. We have an aging population and we need immigrants to help fulfill those jobs. Just as in the last question, we see that there are lots of jobs that are going unfilled. Without Philippine healthcare workers, for instance, our healthcare system would be in a worse shape than it currently is. One of the challenges that we have with immigration is that the bureaucracy is rather cumbersome. And so there are people who are in a landed immigrant status for years longer than they should be, according to what they're able to do, especially when it's doctors or engineers or professionals that we really need their services. So reducing the cumbersome bureaucracy, reducing the inefficiencies would go a long way towards making sure that those people are available to work as soon as may be. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea. I'll draw the names. We have Andrea and Ron. You can tell it's random. Our next question. How will you commit to working with Indigenous peoples, communities, and organizations to ensure compliance with all 94 calls to action of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada? And we'll start with Andrea.
Thank you for this question. I don't need to talk about the record of the current government. It stands for itself. What I would really like to address is the fact that there are children being apprehended from our Indigenous communities on an ongoing basis, and that needs to stop. The province of Manitoba has got a pilot program. It was a pilot program 4 years ago. They've now implemented it, where they work with those communities to help repair the trauma and keep those families together and supported so that the children have got better health and education outcomes while staying in their home communities. We need that kind of program all across Canada. That would go some distance towards actually understanding the community needs. We can't visit things on them without working with those Indigenous communities. A minute's not very long. Thank you.
Ron, can you please have your response there?
Absolutely. In 2015, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission released its final report, including the 94 calls to action. 6 years later, our government has yet to implement the vast majority of them. And our government is also taking Indigenous children and residential school survivors to court in an attempt to overturn the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal decision that ruled in their favor. We would immediately implement all 94 calls to action from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. We will establish a National Council for Reconciliation, ensure there is funding for a National Day of Truth and Reconciliation, fully fund the exploration of grave sites of former residential institutions to bring all the lost children home, and require churches and governments to hand over any and all records that could help finding children who lay in unmarked graves, give Indigenous communities more control over child welfare systems, appoint a special prosecutor to pursue those who inflict harm on Indigenous children, and protect Indigenous languages with new legislation and stable funding, and fully implement Jordan's principles so that First Nations children are no longer denied the services and supports they need.
Sorry. Thanks, Ron. Now I will pull new names. We have Mel and Shelley. And our next question. If elected, what will be the economic priorities for your government to help small businesses grow substantially across BC? And we'll start with Mel.
Thank you, Adam. This is certainly one of the bigger parts in our platform. We have five pillars, and jobs are one of those five pillars. We realize how small businesses have been hardest hit, especially our tourism and food service industries. We need to get those businesses back up and running again. And we've seen how, even when they try to, they can't. 25% tax credit. And then for those that have been off for longer periods of time, that tax credit can be up to 50%. We have a rebuild Main Street plan. We have a job surge plan. There's so much there. I hope everyone can take a look at the plan and see everything that's there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mel. On to Shelley.
So our government has already reduced the taxes for small businesses from the Conservatives' 11% down to our current 9%. We're also going to extend the Canada Recovery Hire Program to March 2022, which is going to allow small businesses to be more competitive in the market, and they're going to be able to increase wages to attract more employees. We're also going to be moving forward with grants to support small businesses to enter the digital world. Talking to employers entering this digital world will allow them to access markets outside of our local economy. So this is really fantastic for them to be able to expand their businesses. We're also going to be increasing accessibility amount and amounts for loans for small businesses to give them a little bit more funding that's going to help them get through and start building their businesses back.
Thanks, Shelley.